and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Inflation is stubborn. CBS's Kelly O'Grady says the January consumer price report shows a 3% rise over a year ago.
The increases came from food, shelter, and energy. I mean, these are the need to have, not the nice to have. The one highlight is that rent prices are increasing slower than they were.
Defense Secretary Hegseth today indicated NATO membership for Ukraine is unrealistic and the country may not get back land seized by Russia. He said President Trump's committed to a solution.
He intends to end this war by diplomacy and bringing both Russia and Ukraine to the table. And the U.S. Department of Defense will help achieve this goal.
Reports say a Russian crypto kingpin was released in exchange for freedom for an American teacher, released after 3.5 years. U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff.
A few days ago, we were approached by someone and we felt that we could get Mark Fogel home.
CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Multiple parents attended the Wisconsin Rapids School Board meeting on Monday to bring up their concerns about the bullying taking place at both Lincoln High School and also at the Wisconsin Rapids Area Middle School.
Our kids are clearly not being protected the way that they should be against repeat bullies, and our parents are not getting full communication from the school.
Parents also voice concerns about policies in Skyward, which is the student information software. There have been multiple instances when something happens with a student and both parents aren't notified, even when they have joint custody. Another parent suggested having a school safety specialist, a hired position, be on the police liaison. She also asked that the punishment be more than just a suspension.
We want them to think about what they're doing before they do it. So no sports, no dances. We're, you know, cutting everything off, making it feasible for them to really think about what they're doing before they do it.
During later discussion, school board member Julie Tim asked if a committee could be put together on the topic of bullying. She brought up the fact that the board unanimously approved the district's strategic framework and stated,
with our number two goal being each student is the first consideration, we believe in a safe, caring, and respectful learning environment, and I want to make sure we're doing everything we can and communicate that to people.
Superintendent Ron Rasmussen said they can provide an update to the school board next month.
Just at Rams last Monday night for their behavior meeting, 93% of kids at Rams have no discipline referrals.
Rasmussen said they can provide the board background information with their policies and updates. The board further discussed putting out more information to parents and encouraging parents and students to come forward with issues. They also talked about educating parents on Skyward and how to be sure both parents are notified in the instance of a situation with their child. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
Marquette gets the win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Marquette Golden Eagles got a win at home, 68-58 over DePaul. Cam Jones, 19 points in the game, moved him to the number three all-time leading scorer in Marquette history. Stevie Mitchell was 17 for the Golden Eagles and 9 assists on what was the game plan for the first half.
We knew they were going to go zone because they did that last time, so we prepared a lot for that zone. And, you know, as the game went on, just sticking with what we were doing, I think in the first half we were driving it hard, but we were missing some shots. They have good players. They're contesting it. So I think we just were able to stick with what we were doing, even though the results necessarily weren't what we wanted in terms of finishing or making shots. And I just think that's a testament to, you know, our trust in each other, our trust in, you know, our coaches, and, you know, our coaches trusting us.
Marquette is now off until next Tuesday when they host Seton Hall. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Timberwolves tonight in Minnesota, their last game heading into the All-Star break. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Snow this afternoon, piling up around 1 to 2 inches, with another inch possible at night. High temperatures today in the mid-teens are bringing a lighter, fluffier type of snow. A few flurries could fly early tomorrow morning, but otherwise a sunny and cold day as we battle a wind chill. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 4.
Wisconsin Women's Basketball brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep.
Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, and streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, your innocent is proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presumed innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome 24 actor Glenn Morshauer. And joining the show all the way from Sweden, our favorite musical duo, 7,000 Apart. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Mach, Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, a winter storm warning kicks in for southeastern Wisconsin at noon today. A day-long snow event. We're looking at anywhere from 5 to 9 inches of snow, and it's really supposed to hit its peak about 3 o'clock this afternoon, of course, just when you're going to be heading home from work. So check out 511wi.gov. That will give you a map of the entire state of Wisconsin and show you where all the accidents are, where all the lane closures are. It's really useful. It's absolutely free. So if you haven't checked it out yet or downloaded the app, you should do that. Take advantage of it. Again, it's free. 511wi.gov. We do have a number of accidents already scattered around the state, and it is not that bad yet. So keep that in mind. It will probably be considerably worse later on this afternoon. He normally joins us on Fridays, but he's taking a little breather. So he's joining us today, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and also Civic Media's political editor. Good morning, Dan. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jane. Doing well. Snowed in a little bit here in southeastern Wisconsin. Snow day for the kids. So, you know, we're a little bit discombobulated, but happy to be recombobulating with you all on Matinair on Air.
Well, the primary election is Tuesday. It's here.
Yeah, believe it or not, we need to go back to the polls again, Wisconsin. I know.
Surprise.
I know we're all suffering from a great deal of election fatigue and campaign fatigue here in the state of Wisconsin.
No, I missed it. It was great. All the anxiety, that existential dread. Oh, my goodness. You didn't miss it? I did.
So the big race on the primary ballot will be there are currently three people running to head Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, and two of them are Democrats. One is a Republican. Jill Underlie is currently in that spot, and she is running again along with another school superintendent. And the Republican is an advocate or has been an advocate of school choice. So two will go forward. How are you feeling about this race? There haven't been any ads that I've seen.
No, it hasn't been any ads, but I think, you know, there's been some pretty interesting news this week on the race, which was coming out of some of the fundraising reports. You know, you want to look at what's going on in these types of race. You want to follow the money. And WisPolitics always really covers the money side and the fundraising side of politics really well. And they had a piece earlier this week when in kind of the end of the fundraising period for this. And Brittany Kinzer, who you mentioned is kind of the more conservative aligned candidate in this race. She has described herself as a blue dog Democrat and as more of a moderate, but she's, you know, got a former Republican legislator running her campaign. But I think the fundraising totals that she was able to pull in this makes her candidacy pretty interesting. So she was able to raise more than $500,000 for her campaign. And as WisPolitics notes in a piece about, you know, all three of the candidates fundraising, she raised more than $300,000 in the pre-primary period, more than three times what Jill Underle or Jeff Wright were able to raise. And, you know, among those contributions, Kinzer pulled in $20,000 each from Dick and Liz Uline, from Diane Hendricks, and from a number of other major Republican donors going here. So I think, you know, given the fact that there has been a lot of frustration with Underle kind of over the last bit here, you know, she is the incumbent. Incumbency matters a huge deal on these types of races in the state of Wisconsin. But Kinzer's campaign, if she is able to make it through the primary, which, you know, with this type of fundraising, you would have to expect she's got a pretty good chance to. This could be a pretty interesting race here. And I think Kinzer has a real chance to win, because you have the dynamics in the general election where there are going to be a lot of, you know, Republican voters, right wing voters who are going to be heading to the polls to vote for Brad Schimmel in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Stands to reason that many of them might also vote for Brittany Kinzer in the superintendent race. So I think, you know, it has, I've been trying to do a little bit of research into kind of the history of this race, because it, I don't know if there has ever been a candidate like Brittany Kinzer who has won the race for DPI superintendent in the state of Wisconsin. You know, before Underle, it was, you know, there was kind of an interim role. But before her, it was Tony Evers for almost a decade,
right,
as the state superintendent. And, you know, obviously, you know, more aligned with the Democratic wing, you know, public education being a big part of the politics for Democrats in the state of Wisconsin. And Kinzer, you know, she was at the WisPolitics Forum last week talking about a number of different things. And I think that was, you know, kind of an interesting test for whether she can stand up to the spotlight. And she did pretty well in that forum. You know, I was thinking back to 2 years ago when the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, there was a WisPolitics forum for and Jennifer Doro, who everybody thought was going to be, you know, the ascendant candidate in that race to go against Janet Protasiewicz. She did terribly in that WisPolitics forum, and that, you know, and then her candidacy just kind of never really gained steam, and she lost in the primary. Kinzer, I thought, did pretty well in that. Underle was not there for that forum, so, you know, that's an interesting component of this as well. But if it does end up being, you know, Underle versus Kinzer, you know, that's a pretty interesting and potentially very competitive race for state superintendent, unlike what we've seen in quite some time. Because when Underle won a couple of years ago, it was, she won with, like, I think more than nearly 60% of the vote. Evers regularly got more than 60% of the vote when he was running for state superintendent. So this could be the most competitive race for that office we've seen in a generation in Wisconsin.
You make a good point, Dan, in that, you know, Jill Underle is the incumbent, and she certainly has the name recognition, but I don't know that that's going to work in her favor.
Right. You might have a situation where, you know, the fact that she is getting a challenge from somebody also on the left, from Jeff Wright in this campaign as well. You know, there has been, you know, a lot of high profile miscues that have happened in the realm of education. I think people are going to point to what happened with some of the MPS reporting, financial disclosure stuff that happened last year that led to the superintendent there resigning, and some of the connections there between the Department of Public Instruction and some of those financial disclosures as well. You know, she's been in the spotlight about this. You know, it's kind of a more complicated thing than it lets on, but like the issue of, you know, the standards being lowered, and that can be a fairly direct way in a campaign, at least, to challenge the incumbent on that issue as well. So, you know, it might be the type of situation where, you know, we've talked about in the past, Robin Voss doesn't have great name recognition, but the people who know him don't tend to like him. And maybe Jill Underle, with how frustrated Republicans and conservatives in particular have been in her campaign, her time as state superintendent, you know, you might have a dynamic where those on the right who know her don't particularly like her either, and so would be gravitating towards a candidate like Kinzer, who has experience with you know, she was an executive at a charter school. She was essentially a lobbyist for this group, the City Forward Collective, that is based out of Milwaukee, that advocates for charter and voucher schools and things like that, too. So a pretty interesting dynamic for this race, really.
I think one of the things, too, that didn't ingratiate her with either side is the fact that she's asking for $4 billion out of the budget for education. And that's something that I think really hits with individuals, regardless of their party. And, you know, I don't know if that's a – well, I would put good money that is a negotiation tactic, ask for $4 billion when you really only want like 1.5 or 2. But still, yeah. When you have referendums around the state raising property taxes and then MPS becoming a nightmare after the $272 million passes, and then she says $4 billion, that's going to force a lot of people to say, wait a minute. And then she doesn't show up to a debate to defend those positions. Mm-hmm. It's not doing her a lot of good right now. And there's a lot of people I know who are liberals and Democrats who are like, well, maybe Jeff Wright is the correct choice for this one. And that's what I keep thinking about, is that $4 billion over and over again. It's like, well, you can't just throw money at the problem.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, those budgets can often be aspirational, right? And
right.
They're not necessarily put forth to say, like, yes, we think we're going to get $4 billion. But being, you know, a champion of public education, you know, I think the fact that she was endorsed by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is going to, and the fact that she's incumbent, like, I think she's going to get past the primary. I don't know if she's going to be reelected here, because I think Kinzer's campaign has a lot of steam right now. And I do wonder if she, you know, if she's going to get some of the, you know, kind of centrist business establishment votes out of Milwaukee from being part, you know, of groups like City Forward Collective, being part of like Rocket Ship Schools that she was an executive for in the past, if that will, you know, kind of change the larger dynamic in the race as well.
Aren't there, am I only the only one concerned, though, Dan, about the fact that Brittany Kinzer was a lobbyist for private and charter schools? Because to me, it's like, let's put the person who wants to kill public schools in charge of public schools. What could go wrong?
Yeah, there's a lot of concern, I think, with that as well. And I think, you know, she's going to toe the line and talk about, you know, wanting to, you know, support public schools, support all schools, right?
Right.
And take that type of approach to it. But, you know, given that, you know, Tony Evers has talked about himself as the education governor, is he going to be an education governor with a, you know, working with a state superintendent who has potentially very different views on public education from that governor? So, like, there's a lot of factors in play here. And again, I do think there's a, given, look at the fundraising reports, you always follow the money with these races, especially down ballot stuff. Like, the fact that she raised $500,000, that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Tony on the live stream said, I think who is donating is very telling about these donations. Do the Elines want to get into private religious schools? Is that what this is all about? We don't have time to address that, but we're going to talk about the Supreme Court race when we return. Dan Schaefer is here from the Recombobulation area, also Civic Media's political editor. If you have a question or a comment, 855-752-4842. We'll be right back. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. February 10th, the head of the Office of Government Ethics, a Senate-confirmed position, was fired by letter by President Donald Trump, likely illegally. In an even more questionable action the same day, the U.S. Department of Justice dropped federal corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. As we reported last December, Mayor Adams was accused by the Biden DOJ of taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. January 17th, Adams traveled to meet with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. And recently, Adams expressed a willingness to work with the administration on immigration, contrary to New York City's status as a sanctuary city. Now, DOJ has reversed course, citing a memo from Trump's AG restoring the integrity and credibility of the Department of Justice and Trump's executive order ending the weaponization of the federal government. Also on Monday, David Heitema, the director of the Office of Government Ethics, confirmed by the Senate in December for a 5-year term, was notified of his firing by Trump. The head of the Office of Special Counsel, Hampton Dellinger, fired by Trump February 7th, had his removal blocked by a federal judge on Monday. We've linked the DOJ's memo dropping charges against Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm discombobulated.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter after the 11:30 news. We try and lighten things up for the last half hour. We call it audio sorbet.
Ooh.
Little cleansing for your ears.
We need music for that. Like
audio sorbet.
Harps.
Oh, I like that. We're going to talk about the Summerfest lineup because that will be here before we know it. So lots of good acts coming to Summerfest. We will kick that around. We will wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Step This Way edition. If you ever have a thing you think should not be not politics related, send it in to Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says, at civicmedia.us. Our guest is Dan Schaefer, founder of the Recombobulation Area and also Civic Media's political editor. April 1st, yes, we're going back to vote again, this time for the open spot on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We have Susan Crawford running against Brad Schimmel. And talking about money, Dan, these races, too, are pulling in some big bucks.
Yeah, no doubt. This is going to be a big part of this race, too. There was a story again this week from WisPolitics on the donations that have been coming into this. And, you know, because of the way that the kind of structure for political donations has worked in Wisconsin since Scott Walker and Republicans changed the law, it basically allows unlimited donations to state parties, and then those state parties can then kind of funnel those funds to individual candidates, individual causes, whatever it might be. So not only are we looking at like the fundraising for, you know, Susan Crawford's campaign, Brad Schimmel's campaign, whatever it might be, we're taking a look at what happened in the state Democratic Party and the state GOP as well. So the state Democratic Party gave Susan Crawford $2 million last month after getting donations, a $1 million donation from George Soros and a $500,000 donation from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. And then you have something, a similar dynamic on the Republican side. The state Republican Party gave Brad Schimmel $1.6 million in January after getting a nearly $1 million donation from Diane Hendricks and a $650,000 donation from Liz Uline. So yes, this race projects to be the most expensive race, state court race in American history, to beat out the race from 2 years ago when Janet Protasiewicz won. So, you know, right now, Crawford has the lead in fundraising with more than $7.7 million overall to Schimmel's close to $5 million. But because you're getting all of these outside group spending funneling through the state party, I imagine that we're going to get, once we get past the primary in particular, Schimmel is going to get a whole lot of air support from whatever super PAC that the Ulines and Hendricks, spent gobs of money. They spent more, the Uline spent more than Elon Musk in the 2024 election cycle. So I imagine they're going to be spending quite a bit going into this election cycle here for the state Supreme Court.
What always amazes me, though, Dan, is that anytime you hear George Soros, Calvin, where's the dun dun dun? It's all George Soros. It's evil, evil, evil. But the Ulines and, Diane Hendricks, and Elon's going to dump in probably $1 million or more into this race. He's already stuck his nose into the middle of it. And I would like you to reiterate, who is it that made it possible for these outside groups to send in all this money to elect the people they want? What party was it? Under who?
It was Scott Walker and Robin Voss and the state Republican Party.
Okay.
When they had full control of a trifecta in state government.
So they made this possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
So please don't come to me screaming, are you ready, Calvin, about George Soros dumping in money. You can thank Scott Walker for this and the Republican Party.
And the thing is, so everybody opposes money in politics, right?
And ostensibly.
We need to have a party that really champions some level of reform here, because, this change that they made to make unlimited contributions to state parties and then allow state parties to just funnel the money, like, it's just getting a way to get around campaign finance law in the state of Wisconsin. That's why we see, so many ads in the way that we do, and why we see these campaigns. They're so reliant on money. And, it's such a frustrating dynamic for those of us who want to have, like, there are honest debates to be had when it comes to this, but we're not going to be having them because we're just going to be talking about, whatever ads that each party's going to run. And I think this is a problem on both sides, too. Anybody with a long judicial career, they're just going to pluck one ruling that didn't end up to look favorably in the long term and then criticize that. Both sides do it. I hate this type of campaigning. Yep. We have two people you can run. You can criticize their record. Like, Brad Schimmel was attorney general for 4 years. You can criticize his record. And in many ways, a lot of the ads are about his record in particular, but it's just like to go through and pluck one case to get, outrage on. And we've seen it in the past that they've had to pull these ads too. Like during the campaign 2 years ago, when Protasiewicz won, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce had to pull an ad because they misrepresented what was happening to, a victim that they were exploiting their story for political gain. So it's a shameful business.
I was out to brunch on Sunday, and we were watching the Badgers basketball game, and up came an ad for Susan Crawford. The first time I saw one of her ads, and the first thing it does is it does that whole like black and white, Brad Schimmel did this, this, and this. And then immediately after that was a Brad Schimmel ad saying, Judge Crawford did this, this, and this. I'm like, oh my, just do exactly, Dan, just go on their records. You can sum up their records. You can go on with, and it just gets, I really don't like judge races, because it gets this political, even though it's nonpartisan.
Yeah. Nonpartisan name only. Is,
yeah,
is
exactly.
Yeah.
I think they should just all run the same ad and say, my opponent is a blood sucking tick. And then just leave it at that. And we can all move along with our lives.
Paid for by George Soros.
and Liz, Diane Hendricks. Yeah. Yes.
It's just such a frustrating way to campaign. There has to be a better way that we elect leaders than to do this.
Yes.
We have news coming up next, then we'll lighten it up and talk a little Summerfest. Dan Schaefer is here. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hoping for a relaxing weekend. Once I get strapped in the 210.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. A sigh of relief for Wisconsin researchers. For now, here's Lisa Hill with more.
A judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's cut to research funding through the National Institutes of Health. The NIH said it would be cutting all indirect research funding to 15% reimbursement. UW-Madison, for example, had an agreement with the federal government for 53% reimbursement. University officials say this move could significantly disrupt their efforts to find cures to cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and all other kinds of research. Meanwhile, Wisconsin has joined a lawsuit against the Trump administration. In a press release, Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call announced that the state will join 21 other states in the legal challenge. The lawsuit accuses the Trump administration, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the National Institutes of Health of unlawfully cutting the federal funding that supports medical and public health research. Governor Tony Evers called the cuts unconscionable. A judge has ruled that the move cannot take effect right now. They will be back in court 10 days from now.
The Town of Rome transfer site has new stickers, and they are being strict about the new rules. As of today, February 12th, the new stickers are required to use the transfer site. You will need proof of residency or proof of land ownership and license plate numbers to acquire the stickers. There is also a charge of $20 for the first sticker and $10 for each additional sticker. You can purchase the windshield stickers at the Town Hall Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. They're also available at Rome Outdoors. Contractors using the site must have a contractor's permit. They can't borrow the property owners. They must show proof that waste being disposed of is from a property in the Town of Rome. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Liam Neeson was supposed to be stepping back from action movies, but apparently the genre is too embedded in his DNA. The Irish actor just started filming The Mongoose, where he plays Fang Flanagan, a war hero being accused of crimes he supposedly did not commit. To add a little more macho to the fire is a character named Tanker, played by Ving Rhames. Michael Chiklis plays the bad guy and head of the Texas Highway Patrol who chases Neeson literally throughout the film. Don't give up on action movies, Liam. Very few people can do them at your age. Sticking with action heroes, actor Jason Statham has a new film in the works called Black Bear. That might be a working title. There's not a whole lot of information about the plot, but I'm guessing there's a chase and probably some unexpected gunfire. Now that's sarcasm. Statham plays a man who gets pulled into his violent past and probably messes a few people up. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Snow this afternoon, piling up around 1 to 2 inches, with another inch possible at night. High temperatures today in the mid-teens are bringing a lighter, fluffier type of snow. A few flurries could fly early tomorrow morning, but otherwise a sunny and cold day as we battle a wind chill. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 4.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time on Big Show as Supreme Court candidate Susan Crawford joins Trigby Olson and I in an hour number two, What's Worse? Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Calvi on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Dan Schaefer is here, creator of the Recombobulation Area, and also Civic Media's political editor. Before we move on to summertime things, I do want to remind folks that southeastern Wisconsin is under a winter weather warning kicking in at noon. The snow expected to really get heavy about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and this warning goes until 3 a.m. So if you have things you need to go out for, I would suggest doing it now instead of later when things really get bad. And I've been checking this 511wi.gov website, and we've got some serious accidents already. Northbound 94 at the Illinois state line, all lanes are closed because of a crash.
Wait, which direction again?
Northbound.
Okay. I mean, not
northbound,
okay.
Northbound 9441 at the Illinois state line, all the lanes are closed due to a crash. And looking at the DOT camera, it's even worse to the south. So just keep in mind, it's going to get a little hairy as the day goes on. Make sure you build in extra time. Please be patient. And please remember that no matter what you drive and how big and impressive a truck or whatever you have, the laws of physics still apply to you. Anyway, let's move on to summertime things. Let's talk summertime things and think warm thoughts. Summerfest is out with its lineup for the 57th anniversary of the big gig. This change, it still kind of freaks me out because I'm from the Summerfest days of 11 days in a row.
Yeah.
But now they do it over three consecutive Thursday through Saturday blocks. Summerfest, June 19th to the 21st, the 26th to the 28th, and July 3rd to the 5th. And you can actually already start buying tickets if that is something you're interested in. But Dan, is there any one in the lineup that is particularly exciting for you?
Well, I just overall, I really like the day that we have for the Summerfest ground stage lineup announcement day, where they just put all of the stuff out there and you go through the list and, oh, I've heard of this guy. Oh, they're doing a big thing on this type of music this year. It's all, and the fact that it always, you know, is coming out in February, it's like our own little Groundhog Day type of situation where, you know, if Def Leppard's a headliner, then we've got six more weeks of winter or something like that. And just, you know, going through and my friend Matt Wild over at Milwaukee Record always does a terrific public service and taking the announcement and breaking it down in a way that you can actually read when the when each artist is performing at the festival. I always that's part of the tradition now, too, just like seeing the announcement. It looks like, you know, Lollapalooza or Bonnaroo or Coachella or whatever one of these festivals is made to look like with the big promo art. And then, you know, Matt Wild at Milwaukee Record, shout out to Matt Wild, goes through and breaks down like when and on which stage each of these artists are playing. So go check that one out, too, if you are having trouble making sense of these things.
You know, you make a really interesting point, though, because the Summerfest website can be very confusing.
Yeah, definitely.
It really is, trying to figure out where folks are and what stage and what day and what time. And speaking of Def Leppard, Dan, yes, Def Leppard is going to be there on the first day of Summerfest.
That's
at
right.
The AmFam Amphitheater. Def Leppard and Tesla. I don't know. They might want to consider a name change. Just
You know, maybe they're like, it's like the Michael Bolton in Office Space movies. Just like, we had it first.
Yes.
We don't have to change it because of this guy.
Why
terrible.
Should I change my name? He's the one who sucks.
He's the one who ruined it. Yeah. Right. Anybody else who you're really excited about for the first day? I'm looking at Eric Benet, the Isley Brothers for older people like me.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Bone Thugs and Harmony.
For you, Jane? Night. Yeah, for you, Jane. All right.
Jane's going to see Bone Thugs.
I love Eric Benet, the one man stupid enough to cheat on Halle Berry. All right, cool.
He's from Milwaukee, though.
Yeah.
You know, I as an aging dad in my late 30s, I'm excited about artists like the Avett Brothers or MJ Lenderman or maybe Devo. Devo would be kind of fun.
That would be fun.
Cake, a band that I've seen a few different times. They're always put on a really fun live show.
So good.
I kind of want to see the Killers come into the AmFam Amphitheater because I've never seen them live.
Yeah.
You know, just relive my mid-2000s glory days and all of that. So there's a lot of good stuff. But then you also have, I always really enjoy seeing just like the groups of classic rock artists that they pull together for these as well. I'm trying to pull up the day. They had like a bunch in a row that was really fun. Let me try and pull that up here.
I'm just looking at on Friday, June 20th at the BMO Pavilion, they have Foghats, who I actually saw in concert with Boston back in the day. That's at 7:30, and then George Thorogood and the Destroyers at 9:30. I would love to see George Thorogood. Can you start it at 4? Is that asking too much?
You know, I've liked that they have started to do a little bit more of this, where they'll schedule like the bands for the old folks. Like there was a couple like indie rock bands that they scheduled last year for like a 5 p.m. start time. And it's just like, oh, they're going for the aging millennial hipster demographic. And that's exactly what I want. I want to see a band at 5 and then go home by 10.
We know how to party up until 8 p.m.
That's the best way to party. Right. I saw an interview with Collective Soul, and they were talking about, we love playing during the day. We're done by 7. And we're in the bus by 7:30. I mean, seriously, I would love to be a 4 p.m. band. I'd love to be a 4 p.m. band. Oh, baby metal.
You could go see, on that same day where you could see Foghat and George Thorogood, you could also, on a different stage, and this is just like a real good classic rock day, you've got Grand Funk Railroad and Rick Springfield happening on another stage that same day. So I just love the mix of Summerfest. I love Summerfest. It's the best. It's always a riot.
I say this every year. I say, oh my gosh, look at these bands. I really want to go see them. I never go see them, but Baby Metal is coming, and Chicago is coming. Oh, so many good
bands. I always feel good when I look over the list and I can recognize at least 5 names. Well, to me, that's a win.
See, that was the problem with Summerfest for a very long time, is that for years and years and years, it was the Foghats and the Sticks and Sticks cover bands. Just
Bon Jovi cover band headlining.
Non-stop.
Yes.
Yeah. And then somewhere, I think probably about 10 years ago, they were like, we got to start bringing in some younger bands. And now I think they've found in the past like 2 years, at least since COVID, when they came back, this great balance of who are the young people listening to? Who are the older folks listening to? How can we put this all together and actually produce a great show for the day? And that really, like, because you know what? Like, I'm trying to, maybe the Isley Brothers, maybe some kid who's like 15 years old, loves music, is walking past the Isley Brothers, had no intention, and just stays there and watches, and then opens a whole new universe to them for this kind of music. I think that's the cool thing about Summerfest lately.
Absolutely. And I think it is also just like, it's such its own thing. Like you have all of these other, you know, music festival headliners, and they'll just like try to bring in the new fun, cool acts and stuff like that. And you still have Summerfest chugging along, having Rick Springfield perform year after year after year. Like it's I just love how uniquely itself it is. I can't say that I love the 3-weekend format. Like I really loved the 11 days in a row that you would be able to get. I don't. And I think it does kind of like hurt other things in and around Milwaukee by having this 3-weekend format, because you have the whole city is taken over by Summerfest for like, you know, a good chunk of your summer. And so like, I think that hurts some of the other, you know, street festivals, ethnic festivals, like other stuff it's happening in and around Milwaukee. I liked it better when it was 3 days in a row. I get why they're doing it. Like it's probably easier to book and all of that, but you know, I liked spending a random Tuesday just being there from like open until close and just seeing, you know, whatever weird run of bands that they had over the course of the day.
It's interesting that you say that, though. It was nice being able to go on a weekday when it wasn't nearly as crowded, if that wasn't your thing, but you could still hear great music and check everything out. Although I do have to say, from my perspective, one of the jobs that I had for a long time, we worked all 11 days of Summerfest for years and years and years. And so I don't have a problem with the 3 weekends breaking it up a little bit. At least if you had to work it, it became a little tedious.
Oh, my. Yeah, I've had some times where I've gone with a press pass and trying to go every day. Like I was, when I was at Milwaukee Magazine, I'd try to like go, and our office was right by there. And I'd try to go for a little bit every day just to get some photos, get whatever. It's just, it's a lot. It's really a lot. But I also think of just like when I was, you know, when I was in college and I was waiting tables on the weekends, I wouldn't be able to go to these like Saturday shows and stuff like that. Because, you know, you're working on the weekends and stuff like that. So I like there being the option of, you know, going all day on a Tuesday. Like they used to do these, you know, just kind of like punk rock day or jam band day, or like they'd have kind of certain themes to it or whatever. And you get all your friends to go and have a good time on a Tuesday.
Calvin, as our resident young person, looking over the list, is there anybody that jumps out to you that, that appeals to your demographic?
Well, so I listen to a lot of hip hop and rap, which I don't think translates very well to concerts. I just don't think rap shows are really that good. But outside of rap and hip hop, I think the thing that jumps out to me most is probably Porter Robinson on the 4th of July. Mm. He's a really good electronic music artist that I like.
Or is anyone going to go see Sax Squatch? That's hard to say out loud. It's a person, a very tall person dressed in a Sasquatch costume playing a saxophone.
And, oh, that's terrific.
And guess what?
What is he trying to take on Here Come the Mummies from Summerfest or from State Fair? What's going on?
They're coming to Summerfest too. I hope they jam. I hope they
Here
jam.
Here Come the Mummies?
Yep. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I have nothing against the Mummies. I think they're very entertaining.
Yeah.
Craig's coming up with some excellent collaborations here. Calvin, that's a good point on the hip hop because it's just like, it is, they, I think this is a common criticism of Summerfest that they don't have enough hip hop, then not as enough diverse acts, but it's just like it's hard for that type of live show to really translate at a festival like Summerfest. Yeah. It's hard to just go from sitting on the goth rocks and eating a sampler platter to going over to like a hip hop show. It's just not the same.
Is that what they're called now? Goth rocks?
That's what I think this is like the joke of it all. It's just like you're sitting, all the goth kids would sit on the rocks and smoke cigarettes. And so I think I don't know if this is a Milwaukee record thing where they started calling it the goth rocks.
I love it.
A few years ago, but I always enjoy it. I always go, one of the first things I do when I go to Summerfest, I go to Saz's, I get the sampler platter, and I go sit on the goth rocks and eat my cheese curds.
I think,
and I'm sure you blend right in with all the goth kids, Dan.
Absolutely, absolutely. Maybe I did a little bit in my heyday in the 2000s.
He's just sitting there eating the mozzarella sticks, going, it wasn't good. It was better back in my day. Just better.
Right.
BJ on the live stream has a comment. A Summerfest hack that I found is to go on the last day when you can get one free ticket for the next year.
Huh.
You can use that free ticket on a day of your choice and go on the final day again. Repeat.
Wow. I never knew that. Good little hack there,
PJ.
Thank you, PJ. Wow.
Okay. That was a thing. I'll have to plan for the 2026 Summerfest.
Because guests are coming in 2026. Def Leppard and Richard Marx.
I might go to that.
If you want a good Twitter follow, Richard Marx. Oh my goodness, he is hilarious. He doesn't take himself seriously. He's a lot like I can't think of his name. He's a comedian that you talk about, Jane, a lot. He's
Nate Bargatze,
John Fugelsang. He's just
I love him.
Real quick, real smart, and has all, in my opinion, all the right politics, but does not take himself seriously, which is very important for a guy who spent the 80s singing love songs.
Dan Schaefer is the creator of the Recombobulation Area. If you're not a subscriber yet, I highly encourage you to do so. It's really a deal, and you do such great work with all of your other guest writers as well, Dan. And Dan is our political editor for Civic Media. Thanks so much. Enjoy your Friday off.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks, Greg. Be well.
See you, coworker.
Coming up next, this shouldn't be a thing. It's the Step Right This Way, Please edition. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hey, Badger fans, time is running out to catch Wisconsin men's basketball at the Kohl Center this season. Don't miss your chance to see John Blackwell, John Tonjay, and the rest of the Badgers as they battle Big Ten opponents on their home court. Be part of the action and secure your seats today at uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Hey there, folks. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a tip about saving money when you are renting a car. So you know how you get to the rental counter and then they ask you if you want to prepay for gas so you don't have to bring the car back full? Well, I used to get sweaty in those moments as I wasn't sure what the right money choice was. Prepaying for gas at the rental counter? Not worth it. First off, rental companies often charge more per gallon on the prepay than local gas stations do at the pump. And even if they're about equal, fees or taxes on your rental can tip the scales against prepaying. And you'd have to return that car completely empty to get the full value of buying prepaid gas. Otherwise, you're just buying gas for Avis and Budget or whoever. Quick note, make sure you have time to refill the tank before you return the rental. If you don't prepay and you don't fill up, they are going to charge you like they have refilled that car with liquid gold. For more tips, head to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
Every story matters, and the Civic Media Radio Network is celebrating Black History Month by honoring the powerful stories of Wisconsin's own trailblazers.
Looking at the road that was laid before me,
from civil rights to business,
food and like food trucks is just like a cool atmosphere.
Science to music.
Speaking of which, this is why I spit, express sentiment, a lot of cats on here.
I'm Terry Barr, inviting you to join us right here for inspiring stories all month long.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Kelby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call and or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, southeastern Wisconsin under a winter storm warning. That's in effect until 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. So the heaviest of the snow expected to start about 3 o'clock this afternoon. And already we are seeing accidents scattered around the state. We have some near Toma, Mauston, Madison, Janesville, Beloit. And if you're coming from Illinois, northbound 9441 at the Illinois state line, all lanes are closed because of a crash. Again, northbound 94 at the Illinois state line, all lanes there closed because of a crash. And I expect, unfortunately, conditions are only going to worsen. So please keep that in mind and check that website before you head out the door today, 511wi.gov, and please be careful. Thanks to Dan Schaefer for joining us. Want to remind you what's coming up on the show tomorrow. We really have a jam-packed show, Greg Bach.
Indeed.
Angela Lang from Block Black Leaders Organizing Communities will join us at 10:33. Sean Connolly, we spoke with him last year. Much better this time around.
Yeah.
The Berkey is almost here.
Mm-hmm. It's this weekend, I believe.
This Berkey. So we're going to talk about the Birkebeiner tomorrow morning with Sean. And then, of course, Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot, who should be very, very excited. She is the Snow Queen. And then All Things Sports with J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He will be joining us at 11:33. Right now, though, it is... I'm sorry.
I was going to say, do you think we're going to talk about maybe the Jets and Aaron Rodgers? We'll see.
I think that might... Oh, yeah. I think that might come up. Absolutely. We haven't gotten around to that yet. There's some good stuff in there. It is 11:54, Calvin. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, at civicmedia.us. This one today from the Daily Mail in England. The headline reads, unexpected item in baggage area. Moment woman mistakes luggage conveyor belt for passenger walkway. A woman in Russia was checking in for a flight from two cities I can't pronounce in Russia. Wearing a yellow fur coat, a long black skirt, and a pink hat, the woman is seen on security camera footage stepping up onto the conveyor belt as two check-in staff are talking to someone else who's checking in. They're chatting, they're laughing, they're paying no attention to what's going on. The woman, again, now this is where you check in at the airport, and there's the conveyor belt in between stations where you would normally place your suitcase.
Yeah.
That's what she walked up on. She walks up onto the conveyor belt with the desk immediately to her left with two clerks at it who are not paying attention.
Oh, poor dear.
And it takes her, this is obviously an older woman, yeah, because it takes her several attempts to get up on this thing, but she steps up on this conveyor belt and then it's got those rubber pieces that come down.
Yep.
And she starts going through those and it knocks her over and now she's on her back and you just get, there's video. We'll put it in the show notes. And then she's just being, then she's gone.
Yep. I just, that is so, that's kind of, that's heartbreaking. Just a little, just trying to get to her destination. And I just imagine like the two people just talking to each other, just no idea of what's going on. And there's nobody saying, hey, 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 or whatever you say in Russian.
Well, yeah. Нет, нет, нет.
Нет!
The three women chatting at the desk finally are seen turning around and watching in disbelief as this woman vanishes on the conveyor belt. Nobody at that point says, wait. You see, nobody chased after her, Greg.
Well, I mean,
she's gonna end up in, you know, she'll be flying coach.
I was gonna say, it's like a movie where it's like you want to get out of the way but you just can't stop it from happening. You're like, wait a minute, what's going on? No. And then somehow they lost her in like Helsinki or Kiev, you know.
One article in a Russian news outlet said the baggage handlers at the airport were of course surprised when a woman came to them instead of suitcases. Yes. They helped the passenger find the right way. An airport official said disapprovingly that this woman wanted to experience what it was like to fly in the baggage compartment. No, she made a mistake. She's elderly. I don't think she wasn't trying to sneak onto a flight disguised as a suitcase.
Although that is an extra charge if you want it on Spirit.
Spirit's also got those, always has those little add-ons.
Deal, right? After deal after deal.
Yeah. Apparently she was all right and was uninjured. This is not the first time this has happened. Back in 2019, a first-time flyer stepped onto a luggage conveyor belt expecting that it would take them directly to the plane.
Oh, man. Now they have to come up with technology or signs saying otherwise now.
Not this way.
Don't step. Won't take you to plane.
That wraps up today's edition of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Coming up next, we have news on the way, followed by Todd Alba from noon to two. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Please be careful on the roadways. Have a great day. News is next. Keep it here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
This week on The Rational Revolution, our dear friend Ahmaud Rivera Wagner brings Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn to talk about January 6th.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly.
imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report.
Yeas are 52, nays are 48. Nomination is confirmed.
The U.S. Senate has confirmed President Trump's choice for Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. New York's Chuck Schumer led the opposition as every Democrat in the chamber voted against her.
It's hard to believe, of all the talented and capable people, that this is the person nominated.
CBS's Torian Small says Republican Mitch McConnell also voted against her, but others in the GOP who raised questions about Gabbard got behind her.
Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, those are two normally on the fence Republicans who ultimately sided with the party to push Gabbard across the finish line.
Gabbard's a military vet and former congresswoman who had made past comments sympathetic to Russia. She once met with now deposed Syrian President Assad and expressed previous support for government leaker Edward Snowden. CBS News Special Report. I'm Steve Kathan.
James here, host.